This is the Black and Gold Banneret Podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Jeff Sharon and Eric Lopez.
Welcome to the show, Jeff, Eric, and Bryson with you starting out here on the Black and Gold Banneret Podcast. Sorry, we're a little late. As you can tell, I'm a little under the weather. I've actually been a little sick since the weekend. This thing is just whooping me, man. I don't know if I got it from the kids or from the NCAA tournament or whatever, because I was doing PA for the NCAAs. But, hey, we're here. We're in it. We're rolling. Let's get into it. Lots to talk about this week. Basketball season wrapped up. 1-1 in the NIT. The win against Florida, obviously, but then UCF lost at Oregon. Tough place to play. We'll wrap that up. We'll wrap up the season more or less with you. And Taylor Hendricks is leaving. That came down later today. He announced that he is entering his name into the NBA draft. Hardly unexpected, but we'll discuss his pro prospects moving forward as well. We got baseball, we got softball, and a grab bag of things to talk about as well. But let's start with the most recent news. Taylor Hendricks is in fact announcing that he is, or has in fact announced that he is leaving for the NBA. He announced it on his social media earlier today, recording this on Wednesday night. Hendricks was, of course, a four-star recruit, 6'9", forward. This year averaged 15.1 points, 7.0 rebounds, about a steal, an assist and a half. One that somehow did not win the Conference Rookie of the Year award, despite winning the Conference Rookie of the Week award a whole bunch of weeks.
Gotta let it go.
I know. Well, I mean, he's heading into the NBA now, and obviously it's a bummer, Eric, to see a guy come and go so quickly, especially a guy who, you know, I don't know about you, but I felt like, you know, he still has some development left to do. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's the correct decision because, you know, to me, he doesn't really have that much more to prove at the college level. The way that he's going to get better is not through the 20 hours a week or whatever it is. I forget what the limit is, that, you know, 40 hours or 20 hours, I forget, that college coaches can have contact with players. It's going to be as your full-time job, right? And the only way to do that is to go into the NBA. So he sits on someone's bench for a few years, or he goes into the G League, where I think he'll, you know, which is, I think, is probably the most likely option, and develop there.
No, he ain't going to the G League.
You don't think so? You don't think he'll go to the G League wherever he goes? Well, what do you think?
No. It depends where he gets drafted. Close to the lottery or in the lottery? No, he's going to be on the roster. They're going to play him. It depends a lot to where he ends up. He gets the right advice and he does end up in close to the lottery or somewhere in the middle of the first round. We'll see. And everything like that. To your point, the NBA draft is so different now than it was 30 years ago. It used to be that you drafted for the best player. Now you're just drafting for potential. And so that's why he has to go, because he's going on potential. It's become the it thing now. You stay in college, that actually hurts you, which I think is idiotic. But he's got to hope that he's not in the workouts and gets drafted by the right team so he can develop. Because the problem with the NBA is you're going on potential. But if you go on the wrong team, you get, you're never going to be developed as well.
I'm looking at NBA, the NBA draft projection for best available on ESPN. This isn't ascribed to any particular writer right now, but they have him as the 12th best prospect overall. Obviously, Victor Wembanyama, the 7'5 phenom from France, is expected to be number one. Jairus Walker, interestingly enough, who won the Rookie of the Year award in the American, is number six on the list. I'm going around to some of the other NBADraft.net is the one that I usually like to go to. Where do they have him? They have
him at the number 16 pick, going to the Atlanta Hawks, one spot ahead of Jairus Walker, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's but it's like what Eric said. It's like what you said, though, Eric. It's all based on potential. Where do you actually see him going? Do you see him going in the lottery? Do you see him going middle, late first round, second round? What's the range for him at least right now?
I think depends on how he does here leading up to the draft, how he interviews. I think he could be anywhere from a middle first round to late first round. And who knows?
I don't expect him to interview poorly. Like all the times we talked to him in a post game, he was great.
Right, right. But you know? Yeah, that's part of the process. I mean, it's kind of a crapshoot because really, if you talk to the diehard basketball people, this is a three-player draft. There's Wimby, as
Wembanyama.
Yep. Yeah. The kid, I believe is Henderson's his last
Scoot,
name. And then,
yeah, Scoot Henderson is in the G League right now.
Right. And then Brandon Miller, obviously from Alabama.
Those who has are the all three kinds of question marks hanging all over him now for fairly obvious reasons that we won't get into. But anyway.
Sure. But those are the three best players going in. Those will probably go 1-3 in some form. After that, it's kind of a crapshoot. So it really depends on how you do. I think the high ceiling for him is maybe 8-12 range. And then perhaps, but I think realistically, if there's a middle to late middle first round, I think would be pretty good for him. It'll be successful. It'll be the first UCF player to get drafted in the first round. That's why you have to go, because that's guaranteed money. And that's important. First round, second round, it's a big difference. So he's got to hope that he hits here, because there are guys that, you know, there's 60 guys that think they can go to the first round. Hopefully he got the right advice and he knocks it out. Walker will go before him. Walker is more of a physical guy. In fact, Walker just had 6 blocks against Auburn, which is pretty impressive, and really helped them come from behind against the Tigers. So,
yeah,
I think Walker will go before Hendricks. But, again, combines could change everything in these workouts leading up between now and the draft. So you never know.
What about let me think about it this way. Maybe this is a better way of thinking about it. What team do you think or teams do you think he would fit in best with? Or what kind of team, I think, is probably the better question.
Well, it's an interesting question. It's hard to say, right? The Hawks obviously would make sense. They could do, you know, they've kind of made some moves there. The front court. Also, it depends on how teams view him. Do they see him as a stretch, you know, probably 4? Can he play the 3? Can he play? People are going to bring up the Magic. I don't see that. Magic have already have enough front court guys. I don't see that as a fit. Unless they consider,
I think the Magic need 2 guards. That's what they really
need. Yeah, they need backcourt help. So I don't see that as a fit. Miami would actually be a pretty good fit.
Miami would be interesting, actually, come to think of it.
To pair him up with Bam Adebayo. Again, Hendricks can shoot the 3. And that's the thing he's got to prove. Can he shoot the 3 from the NBA range? Also will determine how quickly he goes in the draft. So again, a lot of variables here. It's going to be interesting to see where he fits, but hopefully he lands somewhere where they could develop him. Utah's another team that's obviously rebuilding. So that could be a team to watch as well. Hopefully for his sake, that's not where he ends up, Salt Lake anyway. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, you talked about it being a crapshoot. And speaking of, like, well, crapshoots, I think that's kind of the – is that not the end result of what we're seeing from UCF basketball in general, as we look back on a 19-15 season, 8-10 in the conference, a season that saw, you know, some high highs, you know, wiping out Florida State, although Florida State wasn't all that good, this year. They still, you know, it's good to beat a premier brand in the state, winning the Bahamar Hoops Bahamas Championship. But then some pretty low lows, and we're talking about the close games, right? Asheville on opening night, a UNC Asheville team that went to the tournament. Miami lost by 2 on the home floor. Obviously the buzzer beater loss down at the Orange Bowl Basketball Classic in Sunrise to Mizzou. The 2 losses to South Florida, and, you know, yet the 107-104 double overtime win over Memphis. UCF played Houston, I thought, really tough twice. It was such a weird season. This has got to be, Eric, the weirdest season of UCF men's basketball maybe that I can ever recall. I've been following this program since 2001, 2002 when I was a freshman. And, I mean, that's 22 years. And I've never seen a season where, you know, you just flip a couple coins. And this team's not just in the tournament. They're a lock for an at-large. And yet, you know, no, seriously, like, you know, I mean, you know, you listen, I think you flip.
I think part of the problem is some in the fan base has gotten Joe Lunardi in their head. I think people got caught up in January. I think the ceiling for this team was the playing game in Dayton. Because
really,
if you look at the resume, I mean, the American wasn't great, number one, from a league standpoint. So you didn't get a lot of quality opportunities in the league, which is really what did them in. Number two, look at their quality wins. Oklahoma State didn't make the NCAA tournament. You look at
Florida
State,
Florida State
turned into be a disaster. You look at a team like Ole Miss, which at the time looked like a good win. They turned into have a bad year. This team was unlucky. You know, Dawkins scheduled well. Those teams didn't turn out well. Injuries hurt them. I think Houston and Memphis was always going to get in. I think UCF's best shot was to get in as one of the last four in playing Dayton on Tuesday. I don't think they were going to get in much further than that because I don't think the resume would have been strong enough. Even it is what it is. A couple of games here and there could have made a difference. They probably would have had to win two out of three against Memphis just to have a shot to get in. Honestly, I could see a scenario where they might have been one of the first four out and everybody be upset. That could have been also more a ceiling there. And so I really think they ended up where I thought they would end up, which is the NIT, which is why I think this is a good season. I know some people disagree with that, but to me, I always, with this program in particular, and boy, this is not going to be, this will be totally true moving to the Big 12. If you make postseason, whether it's the NCAA or the NIT, I'm not counting the CBI, that's a joke, but the NCAA or the NIT for this program, that's got to be a great season. The NIT makes it a good season. I know people want to be to the NCAA, but quite frankly, this program doesn't have the history to suggest we should be an NCAA tournament team. It just isn't. It's asinine for people to suggest that. Considering, too, this was basically a rebuild. Basically, this was a brand new team. And people keep bringing up that, well, you had a first-round draft pick. You know how many first-round draft picks have been led teams that haven't even gone to the NCAA tournament? Like Ben Simmons was the number one.
I was going to say, Ben Simmons is the first guy that comes to mind.
Yeah, that though, this is not 1988 anymore where you have the draft is your best player. It's ball potential. So these guys' best basketball is going to be later in the years. Like Taylor Hendricks, this is not going to be his best year. His best year is going to be hopefully for him 4 or 5 years from now in the NBA. It just is what it is. So I think it was a good season considering he lost C.J. Walker basically for the full year. I think he would have made a big difference because I think he's healthy. He's way better than Michael Durr. He's better than Michael Durr.
But it would have been fun to see the two of them on the floor at the same time.
Right.
With Hendricks.
But the point is you would have had options and you didn't. And that put a lot of pressure on Durr. And then you lose Michael Durr for that stretch. And this team just can't play small. So again, to me, that's a situation of a what if season for them. But they won games. They got to the NIT. They did beat Florida. They ran into Oregon, which had too much size for them. And that's something it's interesting. Taylor's going to have to work on that because he has struggled against size. He's going to see a lot of size in the NBA that are just as athletic, if not more athletic than him.
And by the way, UCF is going to see a lot of size in the Big 12 coming up. That's
a great point. It's a great point. That's going to be a barometer too. I mean, it was when I talked to Johnny Dawkins the day before the Oregon game, he mentioned that this Oregon team was as big as it compared to Oklahoma State and a healthy Florida State team. And he was right. Oregon, you know, even though the Oregon was somewhat shorthanded, what they weren't shorthanded on was size. And UCF just couldn't match up with that. They couldn't make a shot from the 3-point line. And it was a long night. So, I think this was a good season, not a great season. People put words in my mouth. It's a good season considering the injuries you had on this team. This was not a healthy team, Jeff. If this team was healthy, I could see the criticism a little more valid. But we never saw the team that was intended to be on the court.
You're bidding farewell. The guys who walked on senior night, Michael Durr, Brandon Suggs, CJ Kelly, Ty Freeman also walked on senior night, although he's listed as a redshirt junior. Jalen Young has announced prior to the NIT that he would be entering the transfer portal. Now he's listed as a redshirt sophomore, so that's kind of, that's a bummer. And then obviously Taylor Hendricks is leaving. We don't know what's going to happen with Tyler Hendricks, who didn't play at all this year. 6'6" guard, you know, obviously a freshman. He had five freshmen on the roster, only two of which saw any action in Taylor Hendricks and Tierna Sila. Obviously, Darius Johnson heads into his third year. Is this going to be another, given the losses that we're looking at right now, is this going to be another rebuilding year as UCF heads into its first season in the Big 12?
Well, with the way the climate is in college athletics with the transfer portal, there is a possibility. Yes, there could be.
It's a possibility that like every year could be a rebuild. Yeah, and
that's the unfortunate. That's the unfortunate thing about it. I think there's additions and subtractions. Here's what you hope from a UCF standpoint: by going to the Big 12, that you attract more better talent. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the legacy of Taylor Hendricks. Taylor Hendricks will not go down as the greatest UCF basketball player during his UCF career. He only played 1 year. For example, Jermaine Taylor had a better career at UCF. Jermaine Taylor's in the Hall of Fame. Jermaine Taylor was an All-American. He's the better player. You could argue that Taylor Hendricks is the best front court player ever, passing Keith Clanton. That's a fair argument in his 1 year. And he's probably maybe go down as, I think his legacy will be the most important player, because if he gets drafted in the first round, if he has a nice NBA career, he is the guy that can open the doors for future recruits and say, you know what? I can go to UCF and I can get to the NBA and I can get to the first round and selected in the first round draft pick, plus playing in the Big 12. Because what UCF's going to need to compete in the Big 12 from an on-the-court standpoint is multiple Taylor Hendricks on the roster. Not just one Taylor Hendricks, but multiple guys. That's the thing that people – no, I mean, that's what people don't understand is in the Big 12, teams like Kansas and all that, they got multiple guys they're going to play professionally.
I mean, so I know that they're with us in the American, but they're going into the Big 12. Look at Houston. Yeah, they got multiple NBA guys on the roster. You know, I know they're leaving, but obviously Texas, you know, they're in the Sweet 16. Here's your current – or future Big 12 teams playing in the Sweet 16. Obviously, Houston, a 1 seed. Texas, a 2 seed. On the other side, what do we – well, Gonzaga has been rumored, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. Right, Kansas State, you know, that's – so that's three right there. And, you know, obviously Arkansas, they beat Kansas by one. Right. You know, no, so they Bill were Self, one point
Bill
away.
Self was, Bill Self was not on the coaching.
Bill, yeah, Bill right. Self Bill Self was not there. But, you know, nonetheless, they were that close. There's been some rumors about San Diego State possibly at some point. So
well, well, the league's got Baylor. Pin in that. Right. The last two national champions.
Kansas but yeah, I mean, yeah, Baylor, Kansas, you know, I mean, and now look at, you know, neither of them are even there right now. And you got Texas, Houston, and K-State right now. So, so, I mean, that's the caliber of program that we're talking about right now.
It's the best league in college basketball. It's the strongest league. Here's the good news. Because we spent so much time on the gloom and the issue, you know, oh my goodness, the challenges of the Big 12. The positive is if UCF were to finish 7th or 8th in the Big 12, you're probably making the NCAA tournament or you're right in the mix. Yeah. So
how many got in? I didn't even count. I forgot.
Seven, I believe, got seven, in. Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma were the ones that didn't get in. Oklahoma State was one of the first four out.
Yeah. So, West Virginia was a 9.
Right.
And they were they in the first four? No, they were not.
I think they got in.
They were not in the first four. But nonetheless, you know. Anyway.
So no, the point is you don't have in the Big 12, you can finish 7th or 8th. And have room for error and still make the NCAA tournament. Whereas leagues like the American, you could finish top half and you're not going to make the NCAA. So I think that's the positive. It's going to take time. It's going to take patience. And we'll see. But I think that Taylor Hendricks has a chance to help UCF compete in the Big 12 in the future, even though he will not take one dribble in the Big 12 conference, depending on what happens to him in the next couple of months. Because I think he is now the poster guy for UCF to say, look, you could be this guy. You could be this guy to get drafted in the first round and help us build this basketball tradition in the strongest league in college basketball where you'll have a ton of exposure.
What do we expect to happen now this offseason? What's going to be the, you know, the thing that UCF is going to have to work on in terms, you know, when we get through recruiting and all that? What are they, what's the, I mean, obviously Hendricks himself is a hole that you have to fill, right? I mean, that big, you know, and Durr leaving. So your front court is obviously going to be really struggling at this point. But what else do you, like, what's on the shopping list? What's on the list of things to do here?
Well, you're right. I think they're going to, I mean, if you look at the trend the last couple of years, they're going to add probably somebody from the front court in the transfer portal. You hope you hit on that. Can they find another CJ Kelly type in the portal? You got a class coming in as well. I'm going to be very interested to see what kind of players are interested in coming to UCF now that UCF's in the Big 12. That'll be interesting. And look, let's not be naive. There'll probably be some departures on this roster as well. So it's hard to kind of handicap this team and where they're going to fit. I would not have high expectations next season because that no program in any of the sports here at UCF will have a bigger adjustment than basketball going into the strongest league. So patience is a virtue. And I think the good news is, I think you give Johnny Dawkins the opportunity to, who's coached in the Power Five, to see what he can do in the league. And that's going to be interesting to see how that plays itself out as well. So I think, too, the big positive from this season that hasn't been brought up, I think UCF got their identity back in basketball. I think they lost their identity the last couple of years from a defensive standpoint, from who they were. And that's why I think this was a good season and why I was pleased, because you knew what this team had to do to win. They were a defensive team. That's what Johnny Dawkins' blueprint is. Mm-hmm. And they got back to that this year, where, quite frankly, I didn't think they had that the last couple of years. I think they try to be somebody like a more of a high-scoring team, and I don't think that worked. So that's why – now that UCF's found their identity back and have that deal, I think they'll actually be okay, because you're going to have to defend if you want to have a shot in the Big 12.
Yeah, top 50 in scoring defense at 65 a game. Yeah. It was 47th in the country. You know, they were top 50 in threes per game. They were also 31st in the country in three-point percentage defense. They defended the arc well, and 71st in field goal percentage defense. I mean, there's room for improvement. And they were also, by the way, top 40 in the country in turnovers forced per game. So, you know, that does show you, you know, I think you're right about that. They did, you know, get their defensive identity back. You know, any of the times I talk with coaches, you know, I always, you know, one of the things that, you know, never ceases to amaze me is the fact that, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin? Right? How many seasons, how many legacies, how many careers are defined essentially by flips of the coin? You know, when you think about, you know, what could have gone differently in some of those one possession games that we saw, you know, and obviously, you know, you could what if it to death, you know, from here to eternity, but still it is one of those things where it's like, you know, man, what was the difference? And Is it really coaching? No, I don't think it's that. At some point you have to chalk it up to just luck.
And
by the way, sorry to interrupt, but like, you know, we saw it in the KenPom where UCF was the fourth unluckiest team in the country in terms of close games. I mean, that's there's, you know, any amount of coaching, you can't coach someone to flip a coin heads or tails, right?
Correct. They were the fourth unluckiest team, according to KenPom. That's what Kevin Brown, ESPN, told me when we had him on the deal. And fans don't like that word. I mean, we get up, oh, luck, you know, luck. That's an excuse. Well, no, I mean.
No, it's not. Luck. It's a reason.
Luck does, a lot of it is luck in sports. It's about draws. It's about a bounce of the ball. A lot of ways we'll get it, you know, we'll get into that with softball in a lot of ways. They're not having the luck this year they had last year. A lot of it is 50-50 luck there. UCF didn't get that luck against Missouri on a half banker of the shot. The sport in particular, there's a very small margin for error. And if you need some things to go your way, and this team didn't get to have things go your way. And yet, despite all that, they won 19 games. They got to a postseason. And they had some good moments. The double overtime win against Memphis is a game classic that people will remember forever. You got to see Taylor Hendricks play at a high level. I thought CJ Kelly grew as the year goes on.
That Florida win was great, man. I'm not gonna lie. I don't want to hear any complaint. You go into Gainesville, you beat Florida.
Smacked them. smacked them. I mean, and we celebrated the UCF football win over Florida and the Gasparilla. Like, it was like a – why we should be able to enjoy this basketball win. We should enjoy every win over Florida.
Right.
Right? So, I think it was a good season. I understand, oh, what could – you know, NCAA and all that. Some people don't like the NIT. You know what? Some people don't like the bowl games. It is what it is. But overall, it could have been far worse. Considering all the things that could have happened. I mean, remember opening night, Jeff, how everybody – I didn't recognize that roster with all the injuries.
I know.
Opening night.
None of the returners played that game against Asheville.
No returners played in that game at all. And it's just,
and what did Asheville do? They made the NCAA tournament. Oh, by the way, you want to talk about – so UCF, by the way, finished 358th in KenPom in terms of close game luck. 358th out of 363. You want to know who was first?
Go for it.
UNC Asheville.
There you go. Veteran team. So, veteran team they have, and they'll be have their star players coming.
By the way, who was? By the way, you want to know who was 10th?
Who was?
Mizzou. Who beat UCF on that half court buzzer beater down in Sunrise? So go figure.
So yeah, so I think it was a good season. I think Johnny did his best job. I think it was a challenging season, and we'll see what happens. I actually think. I'm really intrigued to see how Taylor does in the draft, how he does next season, because I do think that will impact the UCF program moving forward as far as recruiting and as far as getting guys to say, hey, I can come to UCF and be a first-round pick. I don't have to go to Kansas or I don't have to necessarily go to a blue-blood program. So I think that's the legacy of Taylor Hendricks, and I think to some extent that'll be the legacy of this team that you hope that set got their identity back and set the tone for next season. CJ Walker, real quick, we'll have to come, supposed to come back next year. Can he get healthy? That'll help too in the Big 12 because they'll need him if he's healthy.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Bryce and Nick are going to join us, and we're going to talk a little baseball and softball and see what else we got on deck as well. This is the Black and Gold Banneret Podcast. We're back here on the Black and Gold Banneret Podcast. Eric and Jeff here, along with Bryson Turner and Nick Porcelli joining us here. Eric, I got to talk about softball here with you. 18-16. All right, so I think you alluded to this in the first segment. Some bad luck a little bit, right? They won that first game up at Oklahoma State against Arizona. And then they Arizona went State. Two straight games. Or Arizona State. Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. And then they go two straight games without scoring a run. Then they get a game canceled, and then they lose 9-4 to number 2 Oklahoma State. So it's hard to gauge this one because the next game Friday starts conference play, home against Wichita State. The Shockers are number 22 in the country. All right, so now you know, as the kids like to say, stuff gets real. So what was your takeaway from the weekend out west? And what's your preview of this weekend against the Shockers?
Well, it's inconsistent. Got obviously Grace Jewell throwing the no-hitter against Arizona State was a big start there.
First huge. Time made some headlines, man. That was tremendous.
First night pitcher to ever throw a no-hitter against a ranked team.
Yeah.
Ran into Oklahoma State, who's second in the country. Couldn't score off them. Couldn't score off the Arizona State in this rematch. Arizona State, you know, and that's the thing. They're up and down. The weather didn't help. It was like 30 degrees. And then Sunday, their offense got going, but their pitching couldn't hold up Oklahoma State. So it's kind of been up and down. They come in 18-16. Their RPI is 47 going into this week, which is right on the bubble line.
Yep.
And it's frustrating because you have 5 walk-off losses in this season. If you flip 2 or 3 of these, they're probably in the 30s and the 20s.
See? So, luck, man.
This year. So now they come home and they face Wichita State. And these are the 2 best teams in the American. They are the last 2 American Conference champions. There's a good possibility that the winner of this series will probably win a regular season title.
Top it's 2 in the RPI in the American, too.
Yeah, top 2 in the RPI. Yep. Absolutely.
Wichita's at 20 and you like UCF, like you said, at 47, because that's correct. The one that I go right to, right?
Correct. And that's a big one. That's why UCF, you got to win this series to help up your resume. Wichita State, as they always do, have an explosive offense led by Sidney McKinney, who leads the nation in hitting 558. 558 hitting.
Better than 50% chance she gets on base, or she gets a hit.
Correct. But she's been a night's killer throughout her
career. What's her on base, man? That's got to be astronomical.
Close to 600. Yeah, it's close to 600. So she's incredible.
That's insane, man.
She's a great player. To me, she should be in the mix for the National Player of the Year. She probably won't. because she plays at Wichita State. But she was good. She played with Jada Cody on the U.S. national team this fall. So how does the Knights' young pitching staff handle this Wichita State offense? And then can this UCF offense be consistent enough against this young Shockers pitching? That's going to be the key in this matchup. They both teams know each other well. It's become a bit of a rivalry, which is ironic because it's probably going to end after this year. So, but it's huge. It's a huge series. I don't know how I feel about the two best teams starting the conference season. They ended the regular season last year. The league likes to jump in with a big, big weekend series to start. At least they're home.
No, they got it.
Better weather. Yeah, better weather. So we'll see how they come out. I like the fact the Knights have had a week off since that long trip. Wichita State just knocked off Kansas. They're ranked in the top 25. So it's a big one. It's a big series. This will, after this weekend, we'll have a better feel for UCF now moving forward. And I'll be curious how the pitching staff will go against this Wichita lineup with Grace Jewell. You got Sarah Willis, Caitlin Felton. How do they fare against this Shockers team? We'll set the tone for the rest of conference play.
Tell me about the change that really happens with the pace of the season now, because now that you're in conference play, I'm looking at the schedule here. You start conference play Friday, March 24th. All right, this coming Friday. You only have three more non-conference games, all against in-state opponents, and all of them in the next couple weeks. But conference play really lasts, what, a month and in a week? You know, because all of a sudden, early May, conference is over, you know, and the regular season's over. So this is really a sprint now in conference play every time in softball, right?
In the American this year. Now, that will change when UCF goes to the Big 12.
And how
the
so?
The league will be bigger, the Big 12, because you'll have UCF added with Houston and BYU. So the league will be a little bigger. So they'll probably start a week earlier next year. We'll see. We don't know the finality on that. But nonetheless, to your point, it is kind of a month jog here. And then, of course, you got the conference tournament in Tampa. For UCF, the good news is the America is the seventh-rated conference. South Florida's picked it up. They just picked up a big win against Texas. So you should have some opportunities to add to your resume. The negative is, you know, you're kind of on the line here. You kind of have a loss or two that you wish you didn't have. Loyola Marymount. And Stetson in particular, they mentioned the walk-off losses. So you've put yourself in a situation where you've got to do well in conference. Like I said, if you were in the Big 12, you'd be in great shape, but we're not. Not yet. Not enough for their year. You're the Americans. So they got to set the tone, and I'm really curious to see how the pitching staff comes around. I'm interested to see how the catching will be. Will we see Jada Cody catch a little bit more? They haven't used her as a catcher as much. Do they use her more in conference? We don't know. We'll find out. There's a Shannon Doherty who has struggled, hit a home run on Sunday against Oklahoma State. Does that kick her and have a big conference season? They're going to need her to help protect Cody, because teams have stopped pitching, basically are not pitching to Jada Cody this year.
Yeah, just why
not.
Would they?
Yeah, so other players have to step into that role. I don't know. It's going to be a big series. Like I said, Wichita is really good. This is a big series for both teams, because the winner, I think, has a leg up in the conference race, especially Wichita. If Wichita were to win this series, they host South Florida, and they host Houston. So they're in great shape to win the regular season title if they win this series. If UCF were to win this series, they have USF at home and Houston at home. So this is a big swing series. It's a big swing series. We'll see what happens.
We'll be keeping a close eye on that. You're on the call, right?
I am on the call with Alex Powers this weekend, the three games. Hopefully we don't have controversy like we did 2 years ago, where the two teams play to a 0-0 tie due to the drop dead time.
Right, I remember that.
11 innings. That's why the Sunday game, people are wondering, why is it at 11 a.m. Eastern? It's because of that.
It's because Wichita has to get back home.
Correct.
And they want to avoid. And that reverberated throughout the season that year. Remember that?
Yes,
holy
it did.
Shoot. Yeah, it was, I almost forgot about that.
Yeah, it's not something that's a lot of fun. So we'll see. Hopefully we avoid that. But I'm really intrigued. This is a big series. Like I said, you know, people have asked. I don't think UCF can host. That's out the window now. It's about making the tournament. It's about winning the conference title, trying to go out the right way in the American. That's still all in play, though. So we'll see what happens.
Let's flip over to baseball. I'm going to bring in Bryson and Nick to talk about this one. So three-game sweep against the against Dartmouth, double-digit runs in the first two games. And that's kind of really what UCF needed to get back into it here. But then last night, Tuesday night, at UNF in Jacksonville, they lose on a walk-off, 4-2, on a three-run homer. UCF was up 2-1 in the final frame and couldn't close it out. But nonetheless, UCF stands right now at 15-6. One more weekend of non-conference play at home against Maryland, who's receiving votes this coming weekend. And then Tuesday, the 28th, at FAU down in Boca. Shout out to Noah Goldberg. And then the conference season starts on the 31st of March at home against South Florida. So, Nick, I want to start with you right now. When you evaluate this 3-1 week, at 15-6, is UCF starting to pull into where they feel that they should be with this one remaining non-conference series left?
That's a tough one, because the thing with the 3-1 series, like specifically against Dartmouth, I felt like I was seeing a different team every different game. Like the team is just a little inconsistent. You know, one time pitching shows up, another day it doesn't. It's like, so the team is good, and I can see them being really competitive, especially when conference play starts. But I don't know. I want to see consistency from them. And yeah, so far, you know, they're still just too up and down. And it's mainly on pitching. Like, hitting-wise, like, you know, you said it, two double-digit games in the Dartmouth series. So, like, hitting isn't the biggest problem. It's pitching that's got to get consistent.
Yeah. You know, right now, I mean, we're looking at a team that's tied for seventh in the country in home runs per game at 2.14 per game. I mean, they're excellent, you know, but slugging percentage is 21st, but you know, when we look at team ERA, 74th, which isn't all that bad, but
it's not.
You know, but and 51st in strikeout to walk ratio, but you know, bottom line is they got to close some of these games out. Right. Yeah, and you know, we'll see what they do against Maryland as well, because you know, I mean, Maryland, you know, like I said, Maryland is at least as of right now, you know, like we said, receiving votes out of the Big Ten. They're coming down, you know, again. So we'll see how they can recover from that. And I'm particularly very interested to see, you know, I mean, it is a bummer to lose on the road in the walk-off.
Yeah.
How do you come back from that, you know, against the non-conference point? You got to refocus,
yeah,
right?
Like, I think, yeah, I mean, they definitely can beat them. I mean, we've seen that. Like, they've beaten, I mean, you didn't mention it, but I think this is worth mentioning. They swept FSU, a ranked team, last week. So like they've shown they can beat like really talented teams.
Right.
It's just that they're but you know, then they're losing to North Florida on a walk off. So it's just like, you know, you go to a game and you don't know when is the team that on paper you expect, when are they going to show up?
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. So, coming in Maryland, 6 PM Friday, is the first game of that series. 6 p.m. Saturday, 1 p.m. Sunday at John Uliano Park, UCF against Maryland. All right, I'm going to bring both of you guys in here, Bryson and Nick, to talk about track and field, because over the weekend we had the Black and Gold Invitational, which is the opener of the outdoor season. UCF has another home meet this coming weekend, the Knights Invite, to start off this track and field season. So, Bryson, I want to start with you talking about the Black and Gold Invitational. How did this team perform right out of the gate? What did we see? Who got the key performance here for UCF?
That would be senior jumper Jasmine Scott Kilgo. She ended up going on a hot start for her season. She got a 6.38 meter long jump. That's the third longest in the nation thus far this season. And then her 13.20 meter triple jump is the second longest of the entire season.
That's got a qualifier for the NCAAs, right? I mean, she's got to be in.
Well, it's early on, so let's not jump the gun too much here. It does, however, put her in solid company in terms of program history in both jumps as well. Adrian Adams ended up breaking her own program record in the discus throw. So that's another field event where the Knights have a solid start. Jasmine Scott-Kilgo earned AAC Field Athlete of the Week honors. Beyonce DeFreyes got AAC Track Athlete honors of the week after running the eighth fastest 200-meter dash in the nation to begin the season at 23.33 seconds. So, and then the 4x4 100 relay team with a 44.56 second time was the fifth fastest in the nation thus far. No sign of Renia Jones, and that is probably because they wanted to give her a week off after running in the NCAA Indoor Invitational, because every athlete here got a week off before this started. So giving Renia a week off is only fair. So we'll probably, I would think we're going to see her this weekend at the Knights invite. But so far, I think honestly, while Beyonce DeFreyes got a good start as far as the track things, I think it's the field athletes that really made a splash to begin the season with this first home meet.
Yeah. Now let's spin it forward to the Knights invite here, which is a 2-day event, Friday and Saturday. And, you know, Renia Jones, we're thinking, is not going to be the only UCF athlete who'd be making a noteworthy debut. One Nick Porcelli will also be competing. Okay, Nick.
Yeah.
All right. First of all, explain to us, because it's, you know, obviously UCF has just the women's track and field team, but there are men's and women's teams from around the area, you know, playing or competing in this event. So first of all, how'd you get in? And what events are you in, and what insight can you provide about UCF's surface and how it feels? Because you're a distance runner, right? So, yeah. Give us some insight here. Take us inside what's going on.
Okay, so you know, I saw it on the schedule, and I've been wanting to do it for a while. I think Bryson, you pushed me into doing it a little bit more when I told you I was considering it, and you'd be like, "Oh man, that'd be awesome." So I'm like, "All right, I'm doing this."
So now you're running as an unattached athlete. Is that right?
That was going to be my plan. You can do that. However, and a huge shout out to my club president, Dan Duffy. He entered the entire team in. So the entire UCF run club is entered in as its own separate team.
That's the UCF men's running club, right?
Yeah. And women's.
Okay.
We have a woman.
And team. Oh, there is one. Okay.
Yeah. So we'll all be there. So you won't just see me. You'll see a bunch of my club teammates on Friday and Saturday competing. I'll be competing in the 1500 meters. I wish they had 1600, but they don't, but whatever.
Why the difference? It's only 100 meters.
Those are technically two different events, and some offer it. They do it based on international.
Right, because 1500 is considered the metric mile.
Yeah, right? That's right. Yeah, so that's what they're doing.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, we'll all be competing. In a weird way, I think we kind of like to think that, you know, we're all going out there to have fun, but we also want to show that, like, hey, we belong here, because we have really talented runners, like guys who are really fast. And if they really wanted to, they could be running for D1 schools right now. And I think we also like to think that, you know, this is our track too. Like, we have had multiple practices out on there, you know, because like it's open to the public. So every Monday we'll be out there. So, and like, I like to think that, you know, like, I have a weird advantage. Like, I've been on that track. I know what it's like. You're asking about the surface. It's got a good bounce to it. You know, I feel comfortable whenever I run on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
how is it different from like other surfaces? Like, 'cause I'm always fascinated by this. Like, do you consider that like it's a pretty good surface? It's about middle of the road. It's, you know, what is it like as a runner?
I'm not the best one to ask about that, because where I came from, all our tracks, I mean,
you were running on asphalt.
Yeah. I mean, of course, when I leave, that's when they upgrade it to like the really nice rubber material. But that's what the track here is. So it's the best one I've ran on. So, yeah, it's one of the better tracks I've seen. So,
OK, Nick, when and where are we going to see you?
It keeps changing the schedule. As of now, I'm supposed to go off at, I believe, 7:55 p.m. So late night.
Yeah, men's 1500, 7:55 on Friday.
Yeah, that's when I'll be. Late night run, Friday night. And
there's just one go, right? It's not a semifinal and a final. It's just one final and you go.
Yeah.
Okay. How many runners are you competing against, you know?
Yeah, that's the one thing they haven't told me. I will be finding that out on the day of. Yeah.
Are you going to be wearing your UCF tank, or are you going to be wearing, like, you know, like one probably. That you got? Okay.
I don't know if they're – I was actually surprised. Like, I don't know if they'd let us because we are using the logo, but I think we're fine with that. So, yeah, I'll be wearing that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Wow. Black and gold banneret track star Nick Porcelli joining us live from the track. Are you going to – we should give you a GoPro or something.
Yeah. Man, I'm already feeling sluggish this week.
Let's do it for the content. What's your best time in the 1500?
Yeah, this is my first time running it, actually.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
I've done a couple meets earlier this year, but they've all been 1600s.
Okay, what's your best time in the 1600?
520.
520. So, okay.
Not the
so
best.
What do you think you can get in the 1500? You're thinking you can break 5?
I'm hoping that I can. I've been feeling really beat this week, and I think that's just because I've been pushing myself a little too hard in training, but I'm giving myself off day tomorrow, and then, you know, like I said, races until 7, so I got a lot of hours to chill before. So I'm hoping I'll be healed up, and if I can go, like, I'm going to give it all I have. I'm going to make sure I'm not going to be comfortable during this race. That's my one thing. Just keep going. Just try to fight through the pain, and if I do that, yeah, I'm going to beat 5.
What's hard about the 1500?
So, like, the thing is, like, when I'm – in terms of, like, the distance, that's not hard for me anymore. Like, an average day for me is I'm going out there and running, like, 5 miles. So, like, 1 mile feels like nothing. But, like, when you just keep having to, like, lap it, it's mentally – it sucks.
It's tedious.
Yeah. Like, it's a little better. Like, earlier this year I did the 5K, which is over 12 laps on a – track, and that is just the worst, even though in reality that I can do that distance easily. So yeah, it's just, especially when, and that's just hard, like when you're just trying to run on your own, when you're in a competition and you're like competing against each other and the stress levels are even higher, that's even worse. So it's mentally taxing.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
interesting. Okay, Black and gold banneret crew is going to be out there, like, cheering Nick on. We're going to bring out the cowbells. We got to do this. We got to be out there supporting you, Nick. All right, 1500. So I'm looking forward to it.
Next track. We're finally going to cover
it. I know. Yeah. Like, Nick Porcelli is breaking the ice. UCF. Yeah. Hey, shout out to the UCF Run Club, by the way. It's been they've been going at for a long time, you know, and I did not realize that you guys, you know, were competing in like NCAA sanctioned meets as well.
This is our first year. Like, this is our first year as a competitive club team. Like, we've been around for a while, but this is our first year we joined called NERCA. Yeah, so we did some cross-country meets. I'm hoping next year that maybe we can enter the UCF hosted cross-country invitational. I think we have had some guys who've done it in the past, but
hey man,
yeah,
we're all about it here. We're on the bandwagon, Nick. Here we go. This is it. All right, Nick. Yeah. Porcelli, cool.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to this. Bryson, let me get back with you here. Just real quick recaps. I just want to update everyone on tennis and golf. Men's tennis right now 5-10, but they got a victory over Arkansas earlier today. Much needed one. They're now down to just 5 matches left to go, and they're all against conference teams in the regular season. Now, I know everyone's looking at them, man, they're 5-10. That seems kind of rough. But where are they right now in terms of, you know, men's tennis rank? Because they've managed to, you know, in the past, like you know, kind of pull a rabbit out of their hat because their schedule was so tough. And I think that this, you know, this year is no different. But, you know, is that the case right now? I'm trying to pull up the ITA rankings. But, you know, that win against, you know, that win against Arkansas, yeah, that's huge. But, you know, where are they right now? What do we need to be looking for as they head to these last 5 matches against in-conference opponents?
Well, this is – now, the ITA rankings came out before the Arkansas matchup, so keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. Even though they lost 4-0 against number 4 Ohio State and lost 4-3 against number 2 Texas, they actually jumped up 10 spots.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They went from 67th to 57th.
That is correct. That is correct. Now, that said, going 4-3 against the number 2 team in the country, is a very well done accomplishment for a team this young as it is. And Bogdan Pavel and Leighton Krejci, they managed to take down two top 10 ranked doubles teams during the course of this week. It was the number three ranked Elliot. So all that. So they jumped like 46 spots in the doubles ITA ranking. Wow. So individual, even if this team for some reason doesn't make the NCAA regionals, if they don't do that, and with a team as young as it is, maybe that's going to happen. I think we could potentially see individual success from people like Krejci and Bedell.
Right. And they got Wichita State this weekend coming up. So that's one thing that you know, again, they got that, and then they got some time off, and then at Memphis, April 2nd, and that starts that stretch where they go Memphis, home Tulane, at South Florida. That one's going to be big. Home for Tulsa, who's right with them in those ITA rankings. So, and then the American Championship in Orlando on April the 21st, just a month away. The women are 7-7 on the season so far. They've split their last four. Last Friday, they lost to number 7 NC State 6-1. They have two more opponents from the ACC coming up. They're at Georgia Tech in Atlanta on Thursday. They're at Clemson on Saturday, and then they come home. They have Tulane, Bethune, South Florida, and number 69 SMU to close out the season. So what's the situation with the women's team right now, Bryson, as they're trying to, again, recapture some of the magic that they've had the last couple years, and this season's been a little bit more of a struggle than they're used to?
You are right about that. Brian Kanyeko really scheduled a hard one this season. They are currently now on a stretch of count of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 ranked opponents thus far, and then they're going to be facing two more in Georgia Tech and Clemson. So yeah. So it has been a gauntlet of a schedule for this women's tennis team. Now, that said, they have had their moments. For instance, Nandini Sharma and true freshman Stephanie Webb teamed up to take down the number 9 ranked doubles pair, in the nation against NC State to jump them to number 57 in the nation in doubles pairs, where Nandini already has a pairing ranked in that top 100-ish areas with Sophia Viole. Now, there might be a brewing story out of there because Marie Mattel retired from her singles matchup against NC State. Now, you don't necessarily know what for, but whenever someone goes down, loses via retirement, that brings in a potential that an injury.
Injury, yeah.
So we'll see what happens. We'll see if Marie Mattel ends up going for this next game against Georgia Tech. If she doesn't play, then that could mean that she was injured in some fashion. And if so, I will figure that out and get something out about that as soon as I can. But that is going to be something to monitor because Marie Mattel is honestly been the closest thing to it, like an ace player, like court number one player that this team has.
Yeah.
And they're right number 4. They did crack the top 25 in the ITA
rank. Yeah. I did see that. They were 24th. UCF, by the way, I want to check the golf rankings. Both golf teams are off this week, but women's golf right now at 20th in the golf stat rankings, which is nice to see.
19, actually.
19th, okay, and the latest ones, because the ones I'm looking at, I see them at 20. And then the men, you'll have to double-check me on this, Bryson. I see them at 76th.
When I checked it, I had them at 73.
73, okay. Yeah, because I went right to golfstat.com for you. So that's kind of where they are right now. So the men have a little bit more work to do than the women, at least at this point. But they still have a couple more tournaments left to go before they go to the American Championships, which are in late April for the men and the women right before them. So around mid-April, 17th, 18th, 19th in Brooksville, Florida. All right. And then
the golf stat rankings updated today. So that.
Oh, they did.
Yes, they gotcha. Did. I think what I checked was the one I had before.
Ah, okay. So I did have it right. I knew it. All right. So that's gotten you all caught up. Now, before we go, Nick, we want to talk a couple things, get you in here on World Baseball Classic wrapped up last night in dramatic fashion, USA losing to Japan, Mike Trout losing to Shohei Ohtani in the final at bat of the tournament. But, You've got a story up on blackandgoldbanneret.com that I think is worth checking out. Two former Knights in the World Baseball Classic getting their chance on the world stage. How'd they do?
So we had Colton Gordon for pitching for Israel, and we had Darnell Sweeney playing for Great Britain. And, you know, both had interesting showings, you know.
Colton kind of struggled in that one game that he pitched. Struggled, he wasn't alone, though.
He played one of the more talented rosters, and you know, like I say it in the story, he's still kind of coming off that coming back from Tommy John. Like this is one of his first major things he's done. Like he played a little in Single A and a couple other levels when he came back in the 2022 season, but. He's got good potential going forward. Like I've seen a lot of people saying he could start off. He's currently in the Houston Astros minor league system. They project that he could maybe start in AAA. So he's got a lot of potential, and he's a guy I would keep an eye out on because I think he's going to be putting on an MLB uniform one day.
And then Darnell Sweeney, I think I saw from the stats, he had a really good World Baseball Classic tournament for Team GB, right?
Yeah.
Despite the terrible Great Britain uniforms that everyone was making fun of on social media. But
hey, we mentioned this last week though. Greatest home run celebration ever. Getting knighted after every home run.
That's right.
That's the best.
He hit 400?
Yeah, around that. I mean, let me pull up his stats real fast. He appeared in all four games, started in three. Then he was a pitch hitter in the final one. And out of nine plate appearances, he had four hits and an RBI, so like
so he was over 400. Yeah,
and keep in mind, he played in like the toughest, in my opinion, toughest division in that group. I mean, you had USA, Mexico, and a couple other good teams that I don't know why I'm forgetting about. But like,
yeah,
you know,
he was in the El Grupo del Muerto, huh? And that was rough.
So you know, for that, like, that's pretty impressive. You know, he's a guy that's. He last played in 2022 for an independent league team. He strikes me as a guy that, you know, he loves baseball and he's just trying to make that comeback, maybe to the MLB. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Maybe that performance gets a team to sign him.
Yeah. Last but not least, you got a note for me in the XFL. Rinnell Hall finally made his debut for the Arlington Renegades. Is that right? Over this past week, he'd been fighting off some injuries. And now, finally, midway through the season, he's finally back. Now, update us on this, because obviously he was a wide receiver at UCF. You know, tried to make him in the NFL as a wide receiver. Switched positions, actually, to defensive back. Did he see time on offense or defense? What was the latest on Rinnell?
He is listed on the Arlington roster as a wide receiver. And if you look at his stats from the game, there's no defensive stats. He only has offensive stats. So he was mainly used as a wide receiver. Two receptions, 16 yards, as well as a rushing yard for 21 yards. So, you know, sparingly, but, you know, he probably hasn't had much time to gel with the offense yet. So you can kind of get that.
It's good to see Rinnell back out there. I mean, he was playing, actually, I thought, pretty well for the Tampa Bay Vipers before in the XFL 2020 variant before COVID hit and put the kibosh on everything. But it's good to see Rinnell back out there. And he's teammates with AK. At Arlington too.
Actually, they caught him, unfortunately.
Oh, they let AK go?
So, screw the Renegades, man. They cut my boy.
He's unbelievable.
I don't know.
Bummer for
him. I got a feeling we might see him pop up somewhere, though. He'll be fine. Maybe the USFL. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, the USFL is starting. We're going to be taking a look at that and another UCF wide receiver, you know, toward the end of April who made waves in the USFL last year was Marlon Williams. And we'll see if Marlon is back with the Birmingham Stallions or what. I know that the USFL is still ironing out their rosters. I'm very curious to see if there are going to be any players who pull the double, play for both the XFL and the USFL in the same. I don't know if that's contractually possible, but I don't see why that wouldn't be.
Yeah. I don't know if you'd want to do that because that's got to be tough in your body because a lot of these guys are back to the NFL, so maybe.
But on the other hand, some of these guys are like, you know, I want to get the tape, right? You know, I mean.
Yeah, that would suck, though, because, like, I was just.
That would be rough, yeah.
There's no stop for us when it comes to football right now. NFL ends, XFL starts, XFL ends, USFL starts, and by the time that ends.
Training camp. Off we go, right? Yeah. All right, so.
If you had one guy going through that, that's a year-long football cycle, and God, that cannot be healthy.
Year-round sport. Well, we're used to that, right? I mean, it is, yeah, after all, spring football season. As spring ball has begun at UCF as well. We'll be monitoring things as they go through that as well. And, hey, John Rhys Plumlee splitting time between baseball and football. He was actually out there at the practices and everything. He's getting busy out there, answering a lot of questions about, hey, would he be able to do this or that with, yeah, you know, UCF baseball and football. So far, he's – Unless he has an identical twin we're not aware of, he's been pulling it off. So,
respect to that, man. I mean, that's got to be so like mentally taxing.
But he's almost as busy as you, Nick, doing, you know, track and field and then writing for us.
We are not the same. Don't put me in the same.
All right, let's put a wrapper on this thing. Don't forget to follow us at UCF Panorama _SBN. You can also follow me individually at Jeff_Sharon. Eric at Eric Lopez Elo, Bryson at It's Bryson Turner, Nick at Nick Porcelli number two. Also follow Drew at Statboy Drew. Follow Kyle at the SOTG. Follow Noah at the Noah Goldberg. Derek Warden _DS Warden. Everybody here at Black and Gold Banneret helping us out. And one last thing I wanted to wrap with: a lot of us had a great time last week helping out at the NCAA tournament, which was hosted in Orlando, the first and second rounds. Obviously, I was doing PA at the Amway Center. Noah was helping out with photography. Bryson, you were there doing some volunteer work with media credentialing. Eric was there helping out on with his 247 News as well. Eric, that you were getting sound for over there.
Yes, working 247. That is correct.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it was like a Black and Gold Banneret reunion right there, and we saw some amazing moments. We saw some great teams. The second round games were Tennessee Duke and then San Diego State Furman. Of course, we all saw what Furman did in that very first game, which is to me is like, that's the buzzer beater of the tournament so far, I think.
What a crazy tournament it's been. What a crazy tournament.
It's been wild, but it's been fun. We'll be continuing to watch that, as things progress, and keep an eye on basketball as UCF men's basketball and women's basketball are now in the off season. So, now we're really diving into the transition from the American to the Big 12, because these teams are making those moves with that Big 12 tag in mind. So off we go. We're heading into the most important spring and summer in the history of UCF athletics. And we are glad to be here with it. We're so glad that you are here to listen to it with us. For all of us here at Black and Gold Banneret, for Eric and Bryson and Nick, I'm Jeff. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, also on Instagram. Also subscribe to our YouTube channel for all the latest post-game interviews and media availabilities with UCF athletes and coaches from across the spectrum of UCF sports. On behalf of all of us, have a great week. Go Knights. Charge on. We will see you next week.